It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I hope everyone's having a great weekend. You know, on the Todd Leonard Show, Journey of Giving Back, each week we bring on wonderful people, people making the world better. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube, follow and like us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you know someone making the difference in the world, making the world better, let them reach me, Todd Leonard. You can always reach me at 973-920-7900. On the Journey of Giving Back, I love doing the show. I get to look around and see who's making a difference, who's making the world better, who's making an impact on the community, who's lifting up those that need a hand up. And today I have a great honor. I have Darlene Trappier, Pastor Darlene Trappier, all the way from Mount Holly, New Jersey. Woke up early today. In fact, she beat me to the station. Her and her handsome husband, Trapp, who served in the Air Force. And the reason why I brought Darlene on today, she founded the Beacon of Hope over 10 years ago. But she has an incredible story for us. We're going to go on a journey with Darlene. We're going to talk about when she was just a young lady at 19 years old. She had a five-week baby boy, Johnny. She was in a park. They were hiding. Unfortunately, she had to leave her home. She was being abused, and she had to go out in the world by herself. $10, some money, just like nothing, a diaper bag, a suitcase. We're going to go on a journey with her and all the things she did. But most importantly, she made a promise to herself. And we're going to go on this journey with Darlene and hear about her wonderful story and how she's lifted up the world. Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning, Todd.
You know, thank you so much. You know, I mentioned to Darlene, you know, I look around, see who's making a difference. Darlene's like, how'd you hear about what I was doing? Well, she's the USA Today Woman of the Year for 2023 for the Garden State right here in New Jersey. And when I saw and learned about what you were doing, Darlene, I was like, I'd love for you one day to come on the show. And I know we've been talking over the last few months, emails back and forth. And it's just a real honor for you to take time out of your day.
Oh, thank you.
So, Darlene, on the journey of giving back, I mean this from my heart and soul. I love meeting new people that are making a difference.
I try to
inspire and motivate the folks tuning in, because I think that's my calling in life too, is to spread that word that there's wonderful things out there. You know, too often we focus on the negative instead of the positive.
Yes.
You have a very uplifting and powerful story, but candidly, you went through a lot of adversity.
Yes.
A lot of adversity as a young lady. And obviously everybody goes through things in life, but I love the fact you've been so resilient. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, back when you were, you know, a young girl? I know you kind of poured yourself into books to kind of like escape from the abuse. What was it like growing up in that type of environment? You were in Los Angeles, California. What was it like, Darlene?
Well, I was number 7 of 8 kids and had a single mom, and she did the best that she could. But it, you know, it affected all of us differently. And me being so young and very sensitive, you know, we were physically abused, mentally, emotionally abused, and I had to find a way to escape to save myself, and that was through books. When I picked up a book for the first time and I read it, I actually put myself in the story, and it took me away from the outside world, and it gave me a place to escape, to be able to try to keep myself together. So books was, and I recommend everybody to read books. Books are very, very good. So I
hope my boys are listening. I tell those youngsters to tune in, Darlene, because I said you gotta read.
Yes, reading is fundamental.
Indeed.
But it can also save your life. So I was able to, I read all kinds of books. And at 8, 9 years old, you know, I was learning, still learning to read. So I just started in books in my age group, and then I just started reading more and more, and then I would go to the library. Back then, it was safe to go to the library by yourself. So I would walk the 7 or 8 blocks to the library, had my own little cart, and I'd check out like 4 or 5 books and climb up in the closet and get under the clothes and had a flashlight, and I would just read, just kept reading. And it helped me to escape the things that I was living with, the things that I was seeing as a child. So, books kind of started me on my pathway in life, you know, but it wasn't always, books didn't always help, you know, because you have to come out of the closet, you have to come from under the clothes, and you have to face reality. You know, it was the life that I was dealt, it was the hand that I was dealt, but I had to take the hands and try to make something good out of them. So, you know, growing up in that household, I forgave my mom, you know, as I grew older.
When did you forgive your mom? How old were you?
I think I was in my early 20s.
And this is already after, you know, your incredible story when you were 19 and in the park alone with your baby boy, the beautiful Johnny. But when you were 19, I know that you had to leave the house. You had to get out.
Yes.
That must have been an incredibly difficult decision. Can you tell us, you know, when you were so young? Because a lot of people go through this in life, unfortunately. They struggle, and they don't know what to do. But what made you decide, like, I just have to get out?
Well, I didn't. The choice was made for me. Because my mother was addicted to gambling. And I was on public assistance. And my son's father at the time was in the Navy, and he was out to sea for the week, so I had, you know, nowhere to go. And when I came home, I had a public assistance check, so I was going to ask my mom for it so I could cash it and give her portion for staying at home. But she had already taken the check and put my signature on it, took it to the bank and cashed it so she could use it to gamble with. And when I asked her for it, she got angry. She gave me 30 minutes and told me I had to get out of her house. So she made the decision for me to leave. I had nowhere to go. So I had my son's stroller, I had a suitcase, I had his diaper bag, and I had $10. And we went to the nearest park, which was Dorsey Park. It's near the high school. And we stayed there. We crawled up in the bushes. I tried to keep him as quiet as possible. I bathed him with baby wipes, and I started crying. And I was like, you know, this is not right. You know, I didn't do anything to cause this. But her addiction became my problem, and I had to find a solution. So I cried out that night, and I said, Lord, if you help me get out of this situation that I'm in, you know, I knew God, but I didn't know God, not as my personal savior. I knew him from her sending us to Sunday school when we were young, but I never developed a personal relationship with him at that time. But I cried out and I said, Lord, if you get me out of this situation and put me in a position where I can reduce as much as I can others from feeling what I'm feeling right now, because that's a feeling of separation. You feel like you almost have no identity. You have no address. You have no one that you can call. And it's very lonely. And I told the Lord, if he does that for me, then I would keep my promise. And it took me some time to get there, but I kept my promise.
And that's a beautiful thing, you know, Darlene, you kept your promise. And you know, the promise was that you don't want anybody to feel the way you're feeling at that moment in time.
Right.
And, you know, that must have been such a difficult, challenging time for you because you were alone. You had Johnny there, just a little newborn. And a lot of people pray to God. The question, though, is do they keep the promise?
Yes.
Because, you know, a lot of times I know, you know, sadly, when my mom was very ill, she was in the hospital, I would go into this little, they had an area where you could pray.
Yes.
And I pray for a lot of things. And I obviously try to keep the promise I made to God. Doesn't matter what your faith is, but when you make a promise, it's important, not just to God, but most importantly, also to yourself.
Yes.
About trying to follow through on life. So when you made that promise, what happened next? Did you have to stay in the park longer, or did you find a place to go?
I was in the park for 3 days.
So let me make sure I understand this. So you and your newborn baby, you're in the park, you're hiding in the bushes. You don't want people to hear your baby whimpering and crying. Obviously, it's a five-week-old baby.
Right.
And how hard was that? What do you remember? I know it's going back a while. You look beautiful, but I know this is a number of years ago. Gotta be a smart host, you know. Plus, trap there in the military, too. So I'm worried about trap coming over here. But seriously, do you ever think about just those 3 days? Because people, and for the listeners, to motivate and inspire, there's people going through hard times right now.
Oh, yes.
And they don't know if they're ever going to get through it. but you normally get through it. But this is not like in your mind. You're living it. Because, you know, I know a lot of people, they get anxious about the future, but normally it doesn't even happen. Like, you're living it. So what was it like those 3 days?
Well, you know, certain things that happen in your life, they're seared, so you remember them. I remember sitting at night. It was more dangerous at night, keeping him quiet. During the day was easier because I could walk around. I had him, in the stroller, and we could walk around all day in the park. We would go get something to eat. I would go to the nearest gas station to clean up, and change clothes. But it's... It makes you, you're either going to have two thought processes. I'm either going to succumb to my situation and circumstances, or I'm going to fight and beat the odds. And I looked down at him, and he was my motivation. I could have given up. Had it been me by myself, I probably would not have come out of it as strongly as I did. But because of looking at him, and he's solely depending on me to exist, solely depending on me to provide for him, I made the conscious decision to say, I'm going to fight for him. And because he's the reason why I had a family. My son, Johnny, started my family. So he didn't ask to come here, but I had to make a way for him to survive, for him to thrive. And I put my personal feelings aside. I hadn't forgiven my mother, but I had to put her on the back burner. And after those 3 days, a sister of mine allowed me to come stay with her for a couple of days. And then when his dad came back from being out to sea, I went back up to Oakland where he was stationed at and stayed there for a month. And then moved back down to Los Angeles. And my mother said, it's time to come home. We never had the discussion, about where I was at, what happened. It was as if it just didn't happen. But in my mind, okay, you're giving me a place to stay, stability for my son, allowing me to get back on my feet. And then I moved forward.
Well, something, so... I always try to understand the human condition. And, right here in Morristown, New Jersey, they have the Market Street Mission. Mm-hmm. And there's folks that are unfortunately on hard times. I mean, they're living on the street and it's a heartbreak. And I was out with my friend recently and there was a guy right outside a really beautiful restaurant. And we started talking and he was like, wow, you're talking to me. People are like scared of me. I'm like, what are we scared about, man? You're like a person.
Right.
When you were in that park for those 3 days, we're going to talk about it a little bit, but there's people that just walk by others in need. Did anybody stop and say, Darlene, are you okay? Or anything in those 3 days in the park?
No. And that's what makes me understand the homeless, whether it's individuals or whether it's families. They see you as their potential future. So if they can ignore you, then they ignore the possibility that they could be in this position at some point in their lives. So for me, I understood it. Did it hurt? Yes. But, I didn't panhandle. I didn't go around asking people for money. Back then, $10 could stretch a bit. I had his diaper bag. I had, everything. I had enough food for him. I had clothing for him. I had diapers for him. I had formula. And I was partially breastfeeding at the time, too. So it made it a little bit easier to take care of him. And I've always been a loner. So to be alone was not a big issue. It was just a hurting situation to be separated, to not have an address.
No, of course. So one of the other things is that you love books. Was
yes.
there any period of time that looking back, from what you were reading, it gave you an example of what a character had gone through and it helped give you more strength? Or did all the reading you did not really have a character quite like this? Or am I like in a fantasy land here? Like maybe there's something you drew upon only because you read and, obviously you can escape through a character.
Right. It wasn't in the books that the one story, the Gilligan's Island.
Okay.
How they were stranded on an island. They had to survive. They had to create a lifestyle for themselves. So I drew on that. Just knowing that other people have been in this situation, though it was a TV show, it was something that I reminded myself, you know, that, you know, if they can do it, I can do it.
Right. And like, once again, I mean, your resiliency and your courage. So let's go a little further now. So at some point in your 20s, you forgave your mom. And,
yes.
You know, forgiveness is very powerful, too. What I've learned as I've gotten through life, you got to let that go. The hatred, the anger towards someone, you end up only hurting yourself.
Yes.
And I know that sounds like a cliche, but if you think about it, it's very liberating.
Yes, it is.
Someone's baggage is going to weigh you down. And if you don't let it go, and it makes you feel, I think, candidly, you feel better in life. So what made you decide that you're going to forgive your mom? Because obviously what your mom did, and I'm not being judgmental at all, but that's really hard on your child to do that. What made you decide to forgive your mom?
I went to a church in Los Angeles. I was working at an insurance company, and I got invited 9 times to come to this particular church with a young lady that I was working with. So on the 9th time, I got nervous, and I said, okay, I'm going to go. So I went, and on that 9th time, I gave my life to the Lord. I was filled with the Holy Spirit, and the pastor said something. He says, you have to forgive your past and everybody that's in it. And I said, but you don't know. And he says, God knows, but you have to forgive your past and everybody that's in it. And I was speaking in tongues. I was laying on the floor for about 1.5 hours. They took me in the back. But when I left there, he says, now you're going back to the same situations. However, you're not going alone. And the next time that I saw my mom, I walked into her house and I looked at her and she said, what's wrong? And I said, nothing. And she said, you look different. And I said one word, Jesus. And I said, I love you and I forgive you.
And what did your mom say?
She just looked at me like maybe I'd had a nervous breakdown. Something was wrong. But I told her, for me to move forward in my life and to teach my children about forgiveness, I had to forgive her. I said, now, whether you accept it or not, that's between you and God. I said, but I had to release it. I have to let it go. And she grabbed me. She hugged me. We started crying. And she said, I'm sorry. And that was the first time in my life at 25 years old that I ever heard my mother say, I'm sorry.
That's an incredible, powerful message for all of us about forgiveness, redemption, if you, whatever your religion is, to find God, because I do think God is important in everybody's life. Is your mom still with us?
No, she passed away in 1989. But the beautiful thing was, I met my husband October 18th, 1984. I remember that day. We got married November 9th, 1985. He was in the military, Air Force at the time, and we got transferred to Texas. So we were in Texas, and I fell and passed out and fell and hit my face. My husband called my mom. She says, oh, no, I'm coming out there. So she came out to Texas where we were stationed at, gave her life to the Lord in my living room.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I didn't know that.
My living room, yes.
Wow.
Yes, and she went to church with us. She was there for about 1 week. She came back home, and she spent the rest of the last 3 years, because she died of breast cancer in 89. So in 86, she gave her life to the Lord. She passed away in 89. When I went out there before she passed away, she said, you are my favorite.
Oh, my God. What a feeling. You know what's crazy about this story, which is beautiful? Life is crazy.
Yes,
now,
it is.
But
yes.
From the adversity when you were 19 in the bushes in the park.
Yes.
Being so alone.
Yes.
And fast forward, it must have been like a surreal experience hearing your mom those many years later.
Yes.
Not only giving her life to God, but just how everything turned around.
Yes, yes.
Was she able to overcome her addiction with gambling?
Yes, she did.
You know how she did it?
she had made a conscious decision. When she developed breast cancer, she had had it for like almost 10 years. So it kind of slowed her life down. And she started walking. They told her she had to stop smoking. There was a lot of things she had to stop doing. So she did. And she even became class mother at my nephew's school, and she would walk him to school instead of driving the 15 blocks because she never walked. But it made her start to see her mortality and making some changes in her life, though she hadn't given her life to the Lord yet, but she had started making changes in her life.
You know what's also incredible about this? Somebody like, I keep on saying incredible because it is a journey we're going on, but this is really a fascinating journey we're having together this morning, is how your mom was influenced by you. You were able to somehow, probably God's work, God's hand, it works mysteriously, but you were able to somehow get your mom
yes.
actually follow your example, which is incredible because most children follow their parents and ended up coming full circle. She ended up following you. That's really powerful. So, darling, one of the things also, and we talk about promises because people do make promises. Most importantly, you got to keep it for yourself,
yes.
Trying to be real to yourself is... You started to fulfill the promise. Tell us about what happened. I know, unfortunately, you were in an insurance company. You injured your back.
Yes.
And so what happened? And how old were you when you hurt? Unfortunately, you had a back injury. And this kind of also pivoted in your life to fulfilling the promise, which brought you here this morning on the journey of giving back once again.
Yes.
So what happened?
Well, we ended up getting transferred here to New Jersey. It was either here or Minot, North Dakota, and there's nothing outside of Minot.
I'm glad you came to the Garden State, yes.
And I was working at the insurance company, and I left that one and went to another one to work in Center City, Philadelphia. And I happened to pass a homeless guy, and his name is William. I'll never forget his name. And I stopped in front of him, and I said, hello. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, are you talking to me? And I said, yes. And I sat down next to him in my work suit, and he says, why are you here? And I said, because I see you. He said, why do you see me? I said, because you're human. And he says, no one else sees me. No one else has seen me. And so I said, I'll be back here at lunch. That was the beginning of my journey.
You know, darling, it's a beautiful journey we're going on. And for the listeners, I know that you founded Beacon of Hope.
Yes.
And we're going to explore that. But for people listening right now to your very powerful message, how do they reach you in the Beacon of Hope? You have a website, a number. How do they reach you?
Well, we have Beacon of Hope. Website is beaconofhopeinc.com. We have Facebook, Beacon of Hope, Inc. We have, you can call us at, we're located at 41 Mill Street in Mount Holly, New Jersey. You can reach us by phone at 609-288-6517. We have, or you can call us at 609-923-1495.
Wonderful. I have a lot of guests come on. Candle, you passed that test with one color. Every now and then, my guests are like, I think they get nervous. Maybe being around me, they might be traumatized. I'm not sure. But going back to this wonderful story. So you notice someone
yes.
who needed, obviously, a hand up, who wanted to be seen. And that's the beauty of your soul. So you understood, because of what you had gone through,
right.
that these people are not invisible. These are real people. It could be anybody at
right.
any time. I've had some wonderful people on from the food pantry locally here, Interfaith Food Pantry, some other wonderful, really, ladies, incredible people, men and women. But you noticed someone. So what did you do next to start to fulfill the promise?
After that, I came home and I told my husband, I met a man who needs help. I said, do you have any clothes that you're willing to give away? Not something that you want to throw away, but something that you want to keep. See, that's the difference. Everybody wants to give away what they don't want. But the blessing comes in when you give away what you want to keep. That's where the true blessing comes in. Those nice pair of shoes that you may have just bought, that outfit that you love so much. That's where the blessing comes in. We can give what we don't want, but when you give what you want to keep, that's when you become a true blessing to other people. So my husband went in his closet, gave stuff that he wanted to keep, and I took it back to him. I gave him clothes. I bought him a lunch. He was sick. I bought him soup. I bought him medicine, everything that he needed. And I learned his life. I would go sit there at lunch and just sit there. And I told my husband, and I would go sit there with him and just learn about his life. He was military. He got injured in the military. So he got a medical discharge. He was married. His wife felt like he couldn't sustain the family. So she took the children and left. He moved in with his brother. The brother said he wasn't bringing enough money in. He was on disability. Brother put him out. Couldn't get disability because you have to have an address. So now guess where he's at? On the street.
Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there's so many people. This is another real problem throughout our great country in which, you know, we're in Morris County, New Jersey, and even here locally, there are folks, as I shared a little bit with the audience, at the Market Street Mission, right in Morristown, like, they're basically on the street.
Oh, yes.
Bags of clothes and, you know, these big bags, and that's how they're living.
Yeah.
But people are walking right by them like they don't exist.
There's families.
You know, and they have that story. They're real.
Yes.
Well, God bless. You know, it's very interesting about the fact that people just go unnoticed, and it could be anybody at any given moment.
Yes, because they're afraid that that could be their future.
So one of the things also is because of what you experienced in your own life, on your own journey, and you saw William, and you spent time, you treated him like a real person, and you gave him hope.
Yes.
Hope.
Yes.
Which is so important. I love hope.
Yes.
You got to have hope.
Yes.
Without hope, you have despair, and you got to have faith and believe. So you decided to really start to get this thing going, fulfilling your promise. What'd you do next?
Well, after working at the insurance company, I went on a trip and the Lord spoke to me. And when I got back, I shared it with my husband. And he says, well, I was waiting on you because God had spoken to him 3 months before. And so we decided we opened up a retail store. I learned a lot about retail stores. And one of the things that they said is pay attention to seniors. Because near the end of the month, from the 21st to the end of the month, a lot of people do not believe this, but at the end of the month, seniors who run out of food, they end up buying pet food. They eat pet food because their income is not sustaining them. So I would make a wish list, and I would ask them to write down the things they would like to have. So on the 15th, when I would order my supplies, I had like a dollar. It was called My Dollar Store in Mount Holly.
You were having time almost.
Yeah. Yes. So I would order the things, and I would have them in the warehouse. So the night of the 20th, we would put it all out on the shelf. So when they would come in on the 21st, they would go, they'd come up with cat food, dog food. And I said, can't tell you that. And I said, because if you didn't buy this all month, why are you buying it now? So I said, well, what is it that you wanted to have? It was corned beef. It was tuna fish. It was a lot of foods like that. So I said, go over to the shelf. You have $10. Go get whatever you need for $10. If they paid it back, fine. If they didn't, fine. If someone was taking care of my mother and my father, that's how I looked at it, taking care of them. Some of them had families. Some of them didn't have families. Some of them have families that were not close enough, you know, in proximity to be able to provide for them. So I took a lot of them on as my parents.
You're unbelievable, darling. What a blessing. I mean, you understood.
Yes.
The human condition. And this is the real world. This is the other thing, too. I mentioned everybody thinks they're in their own little ivory tower, but that's the real world we're living in.
Yes.
Right here in New Jersey. This is down in the Burlington County area.
Yes.
Right. So this is right here in New Jersey. I mean, you know, nice communities, but there's seniors that are falling through the safety net.
Yes.
But you understood that.
Yes.
That's unbelievable. And what was their reaction when the seniors actually realized, like, you knew what was up, right?
Yeah.
You knew, wait a minute. Come on now.
First they was trying to tell me, no. And I said, well, no, I can't sell you. You know, from the 21st to the end of the month, I'm not selling you any type of pet food, but I will let you go and get what you need. I knew God would make up any difference that I would, you know, possibly lose. But our income from the store was you know, was not affected. As a result, the cleaners in the shopping center closed down, and the shopping center knew we were Christians because all we played was Christian music, and they brought all of the clothes over, and we put them in a warehouse. So when people needed clothes, guess where they would go?
Unbelievable. That's a beautiful, beautiful story right now. We're going to be right back in 30 seconds with Darlene Trappier, founder of the Beacon of Hope.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So, Darlene, you know, once again, you have so many wonderful, uplifting stories, motivating folks about what you have done in your life. So let's keep this thing going. So basically, you understood the seniors needed a hand up.
Yes.
And you treated them with dignity and respect.
Yes.
You gave them hope.
Yes.
Once again, without hope, you have really nothing, because you got to believe. You got to have faith. So when did you start the Beacon of Hope?
Well, after we, you know, because of the economy and we shut down the dollar store, I kept doing things from my home. And then my husband said, well, you know, it's starting to outgrow the house. Now you have to look for a place. So I had to think of the name first. And I thought of Beacon of Lighthouse. And I was like, no. And then I said, well, God, what name? And he says, a beacon. He said, keep beacon, because a beacon is a light where all the ships find safety. They come in to find safety. And then hope gives people hope, something, a brighter future. So I said, okay, Beacon of Hope.
So God spoke to you.
Yes.
Unbelievable, because I love the name. Because I also think about bringing light to a situation.
Yes.
My show puts the spotlight on those making a difference.
See?
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm saying. So this is an incredible, you know, what you came, because names are important. When you name something, you don't realize the significance until later.
Right.
Doesn't mean you may not change it, but you really do have to take time and think about it.
Yes.
So you're putting light on a dark situation.
Yes.
You're bringing hope, and you're lifting up the downtrodden. I always believe you got to lift up others that are in need, because you could be in need.
Right.
We're all in need one way or another. This is the other thing that I really believe from my heart and soul. Everybody needs some help. I don't care who you are.
Yes.
You're going through something. And everybody that goes through something, like, no one's going through that, but really people are going through it.
Oh, yes.
You're not by yourself.
Right.
So your husband, Trapp, and you're talking, and this is starting to gain a little momentum. So you actually start the Beacon of Hope in 2010, right?
Yes. We legalized it in 2010, and our church was behind us, so we saved up for the first 2 years, and then we actually opened up it outside of my home in 2012. I was doing it in my home, but I hadn't officially made it a Beacon of Hope yet. But in 2010, we did. And then I moved it to Mount Holly, because we live in Haynesport. So I moved it to Mount Holly. And that's where we officially opened up March 5th, 2012 in Mount Holly.
Beautiful. So you open, is it a storefront?
Yes.
Okay. So you open the storefront up officially in 2012. I realize you're doing wonderful things out of your home. You outgrow it. And then you're going to open up this storefront.
Yes.
Were you nervous? Were you scared about, like, doing something? Because also, once again, what I love doing the show is to inspire, to motivate, to elevate folks who have wonderful ideas, but they're nervous. They're scared, like, oh, my God, I'm going to fall on my face. I'm going to be a fool. Everybody's a fool. I mean, hopefully not today. I want to see the talk. Trap, I hope I'm making some sense. No, but seriously, like, you know, were you nervous? Like, I don't know if this is going to work.
Well, you know, we've all had failure in our life. So failure is never, you know, something that you're afraid of. Most people are afraid of success growing beyond their capacity to maintain it. So it was not the point of failing, because I had failed at other things in my life. So I was familiar with failure. But the success, and if it was going to grow beyond my ability to handle it. But I said, okay, Lord, I still have to keep my promise regardless. And we moved forward. When we opened up, our first month, we fed 80 people. I had one apartment refrigerator, one freezer, and 5 racks for clothing. That was it. And by the end of the year, we were feeding 1,000 people.
So wait, hold on, time out. A little basketball.
Yes.
Even football, whatever sport you're into. I guess in hockey, too, they have timeouts. But no, but literally, you started so humbly in terms of just the size of the store and who you're feeding.
786 square feet.
And you went from like 80 to like 1,000 folks. Like, what was that like, you know, when you start to like see you're reaching out to the masses? How was that feeling? Tell us about it.
It was... I kept my promise. It was, the hashtag came to my heart at that time, and it was, we're now changing lives, one heart at a time.
Now you say hashtag, let me tell you. When I started to promote this show, I'm like, how many hashtags can I jam in there? I used to like hash browns. Not no, but yeah, no, I'm with you on this. You're changing, what? You're changing?
Changing lives, one heart at a time.
And that's a beautiful thing, too, because it is really true.
Yeah, it is.
So you start to build some momentum, and you're like, wow, this is actually working.
Yes.
What are the folks, the folks that are actually benefiting directly? Obviously, you and your wonderful team are benefiting because you're giving back, you're fulfilling your heart and soul. But what about the folks? Because there's a need. Like, you open your doors. There's a need right there.
Right.
And that also shows there really is a need.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? People aren't just coming there because they have nothing else to do or they don't need it. They need it.
Right.
What was it like for the recipients of these beautiful works, God's work you're doing?
They were humbled. They were surprised that we were actually there. They would come in and see the clothing. How much can I take? How much do you need? And we weren't getting much food in. At that time, we were still purchasing food, and people were starting to get to know who we, you know, that we were there. And we started to get donations. We connected with the schools in the area. We connected with some of the churches in the area. So people started to notice that we were there. But the people that were coming in, they were saying, well, I need this. I said, okay, give me a little bit of time, and I'll see what I can do to get
you
to provide for you.
You make a list of this, darling?
Oh, yes, all the time, even now.
You're like the real world Santa Claus. Seriously. People are coming in like with the wish list, but the most important, which is just to get by and live in. Like,
yes.
Because one thing I know, in the sense like, not that I know, that I don't want to, I think I overkicked the cupboard just now. What I mean is, you like, sometimes you don't eat all day, and you know what it's like, but
right.
You know you're going to have food when you get home. These people don't.
Right.
So you're actually feeding people, which is obviously the most important thing. If you can't eat, how are you going to live?
Right.
But you're making a list, and you're like basically meeting these folks' needs that they fall through.
Yes.
Public assistance doesn't cover everyone.
Correct.
People don't have an address. They don't really get all the benefits of our society.
Yes.
And what's that like when, you know, you're like, you made a promise years ago when you were 19, fast forward, and now you're actually delivering, no pun intended, the goods. You're delivering the goods.
Yes.
What's that feeling like?
When the little children come up, Pastor, can I give you a hug? Pastor, thank you. Or they'll bring me their report cards from school. Or they'll invite me to their graduations. Or I get invited to weddings. I get invited to baby showers. I'm like, me? And they're like, yeah, because you influence my life. Or you see them graduating from college, and you know, you had a small part, even though they say your part is bigger. You have a small part. It lets me know I'm keeping my promise.
That's a beautiful thing again. You know, you're very humble, Darlene, Pastor. Where do you get, you're very humble about what you've been doing all these years. I mean, how do you keep the humility?
Well, I have a husband that keeps me grounded. But because of my past, you know, you can't go through a lot of the things that I've been through and others have been through and not see it from a different perspective. I sit on both sides of the table. I sit on the table of want and need. And I also sit on the table of provider. So knowing both sides of the table, it makes it easier. So when other people come to receive assistance, they're not judged. you know, we have people that come in very nice cars, but guess what? That's their home.
Living out of the car. You know, I'm a big fan of Steve Harvey, and I love listening to Steve Harvey and his story. He lived out of his car for 3 years.
But just think, he was by himself. Just think of families that are doing it. I had a lady, she was married in a very nice neighborhood. She drove a white Mercedes SUV. She was a homemaker. Her husband had her staying at home, raising the two or three children they had. He left to go to the store, never came back.
Oh, my God.
She couldn't afford the mortgage, so she came to get food one day, and people were judging her because it was like almost like a new Mercedes SUV. And I said, just because the cover of a book looks pristine, when you open up those pages, some of them are torn, some of them are dirty, some of them are stained because of her hurt and her pain. Her children are living. This is the only thing that she owns because she lost the house. But the car was paid for.
It's interesting. You know, this goes back. My late grandfather, Papa, he was quite a character. Always had a J&B, missed him one hand. I miss him every day. He's a great guy. I mean, now and Papa, I was very blessed with great parents and great grandparents. God, I was very fortunate. But, you know, Papa used to say, you can't judge a book by its cover.
You really cannot.
And he would say, everything that glitters is in gold.
Right.
Because you never know. You know, one of the, you have so many wonderful sayings. And before we talk in detail about all these things, you know, you're very motivational. I mean, I feel like, you know, just like saying, just let's keep on going. But the fact is, you knew what hunger felt like.
Yes.
And I see that resonating through everything you do in your life, through the beacon of hope, giving hope and lifting up others, because you understand it. Now, you've grown. This beautiful organization right there in Mount Holly has really grown by leaps and bounds.
Yes.
I mean, you're feeding a lot of people and you got a whole operation going there. In fact, you have a staff of 11, I read.
Yes, part of them are paid staff and part of them are volunteers. And I'm selective about who comes to be a part, whether you're employed. Most of the employee staff were volunteers. And before they were volunteers, they were recipients.
So you're saying people actually benefited from your services,
yes,
what you're providing. So they were basically homeless or had a lot of issues where they weren't able to put food on the table for themselves and their family.
Yes.
What's it like for those folks? I say your staff, this is family. This is team.
We are family.
Yeah.
We consider ourselves as family.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, like I'm blessed to have a very good law firm. I consider everybody in my firm my family, because
just
the only way to do business. And my late dad was a lawyer and he had he treated people properly with respect and dignity.
Yes.
Anybody in our office, always, if you had a problem, whatever you need, take care of it.
Yes.
But you have this teamwork here. And what's it like for those folks? Because they went through it.
Yes.
And now they're giving back.
Yes.
What's it like for those members of your family, the Beacon of Hope?
They surprise me all the time. Situations, we just lost one of our homeless individuals a couple of weeks ago. And they look at them through their own lens of their homelessness that they went through. They give out of their paychecks. They'll go home and go through their closets and give out. I had one, he had just bought a brand new pair of shoes and he brought it in and put it on the feet of someone else.
That's a blessing, like you just said.
Yes.
You know, for the listener, this is another great example of where people are very fortunate in life. They don't realize, they don't count their blessings.
Right.
But this is an example of where there's people out there listening. Or they know people.
Yes.
They have all this wonderful clothes or whatever they may have, and they're not using it at all. They could just donate it.
Yes.
To whatever local mission is nearby or whatever food pantry, whatever people have. If they're not using it, pay it forward.
Yes.
So you're seeing folks that currently are not overly affluent. With God they are, which is the most important thing, because they're spiritually fulfilled. But they're taking stuff that they really... You know, it's a lot for someone who doesn't have a lot to give something to someone.
Right.
So how do the volunteers feel about that?
They're always looking for a way to help someone. My volunteers are now asking me, do you have a position open? But, you know, for the most part, they come in because it's a very physically taxing, you know, organization. But they come in every day. ready to do what needs to be done. We get on the trucks. We clean up. We sort out food. We sort out clothes. We provide other assistance. So they're happy to come in because we come in with a oneness. And we come in with one of my other hashtags.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Life may be hard, but hard is easier than impossible.
Amen to that.
So they understand that they've had a hard life, and they knew that sometimes it may have felt impossible, but just because it was hard, as long as you never let it get to that point in your mind and your heart of thinking this is impossible, you will overcome that.
That's a beautiful, that's a beautiful saying, to live that with hope and to realize,
yes,
even though you're going through a hard time. And
yes,
once again, for the listeners, people are going through a hard time. People are hurting.
Yes.
They don't see the light. They're in the dark.
Right.
And there's hope.
Yes.
You can't give up. You can never quit. You got to keep on going. I have friends, sadly, they're battling some serious cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to lift them up because it's going to get better, God willing.
Yes.
You got to have the faith, the power, the belief, the power, the prayer.
Yes.
So you have this wonderful team and the beacon of hope.
Yes.
I love saying it. I can't help myself. And how do they reach again? What's the website for the Beacon of Hope?
Beacon of Hope is Beacon of Hope Inc. INC, all one word, .com.
So your programs that you offer, it's not just food. It's not just clothing. You have other programs that you developed.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about the other things that you've done? Because there's a need.
Yes. Well, we had people that couldn't make it during the times that we were open. So they said, how can we have access to food? How can we have access to clothes when you're not there? So we had Gaylords, which are big containers, open containers, that were donated to us. And we would put breads out there early in the morning. We would put out frozen foods. We leave it out just for a certain amount of time. People know what time to come. So they're able to go through and take out what they need. We have bins for clothes so they can actually go through the clothes themselves. Now, when the weather gets too hot, they usually will come knock on the door. My staff lives in the building. So if they can't come to the door, they'll go next door to where my staff lives, knock on the door, they'll come back over, open the door, and hand them out boxes of food. That's how we operate. When people come to me and say, well, I need this, I need this, I need this. We started out with just food and clothes, but then people needed rent. People needed security deposit. People need first month's rent. People needed utility assistance. People needed prescription co-pays. There were people that we would put in the called emergency motel placement, but they couldn't get there. So I created an Uber account, and we use that to give them a one way to get from where they're at to the motel. Because why would you place someone and they can't get there?
I know that nutrition is really important too, to make
yes.
sure the folks that are getting the food understand the nutrition, which is really important. You even have a warming center, Cold Blue Warming Center.
Yes.
Because I know in the winter, it gets bitterly cold. People need a place to go or, they can sadly die out in the streets.
Yes, we work with a wonderful church, our church, New Beginnings Christian Center, and another church, St. Andrew's Episcopal Church. I love them. They opened up their doors to us where we're able to house the homeless. We have army cots. This past winter was heartbreaking because 98% were seniors over 65.
So let's just, once again, that's striking. You're talking about the senior citizens
yes.
of our great country. Right
yes.
here in New Jersey,
yes.
you're helping people in Pennsylvania and Delaware. There's folks out on the street, these seniors.
Yes.
And, what's up? Like, the world is passing these folks by. I mean, this is crazy. So you're actually helping those folks because
yes.
you saw there's a need.
Yes.
And that's striking.
Yes. Well, we had some who had medical conditions, back surgeries and things, and they couldn't get up. So we had box mattresses that was donated to us. We could roll out and put on top of the cot. So we would surprise them and it'd be on their particular bed when they come in. We had a lot of incontinence products. We give them blankets. We give them pillows. We give them clothing, winter clothing, hats, gloves, scarves. We give them cook the meals. So the meals between myself and the church, we cook all of the meals.
What do you like to cook? You have a specialty?
They eat almost anything you give them.
Now, what do you like to cook?
I'm not a big pasta fan because of being a type 2 diabetic, but I do cook a lot of pasta dishes. I cook a lot of baked spaghettis. I do ziti's. I do chicken parm.
You're making me hungry. You went out a roll. You went out a little riff there. No, but that's beautiful that you're doing all this for the folks.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I also read is that because of your involvement in the community, I mean, your food pantry, the Beacon of Hope, has won awards. You've
yes.
got resolutions for you in doing God's work through the Senate here in New Jersey. You got invited to the White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health last year.
Yes.
You were selected specially.
Yes.
I think there are like 25 recipients to
in the country. In the country.
Because you're making some noise here in the Garden State. Well, no, seriously.
Yes.
People are starting to recognize what you're doing because you're a shining example. Got to use the analogy of the light. You're putting the shining light on folks and helping them and the need.
Yes.
What was it like when you were in, you know, you went to the special conference?
First of all, just to be chosen, to be recognized, you know, for what we do, and to be there in the presence of the president, some of the senators,
President Biden.
I was in the same room with him, and he's the same in person as he is on TV.
But we don't go political.
I'm not a politician by any stretch of the imagination.
Friends, you know, we don't want to go there.
No.
I've learned on the Todd Leonard Show, Journey Giving Back.
Yes, we don't. Yes,
the political discord
yes.
and discord and discords out of the room.
Yes.
Because usually nothing good will come of it.
Oh, no.
50% or so will like me and the other 50% will not.
Well, I wasn't there for the politics. I was there to learn about how I can provide for the people that come to receive assistance from us. How I can help them because they have fallen below life. What can I do to help them rise above?
All right. Once again, below life. I love that phrase too. Not that I love that people go through it, but below life.
Yes.
How'd you come up with that phrase? Because this is also the power of words.
Yes.
How'd you come up with below life?
Because I fell below life. I fell below the spectrum where people didn't see me. People didn't notice me. And that's where a lot of people have fallen below life. And since COVID, there's been a lot more people that have fallen below life, where they're not, the families are struggling just to maintain, you know, sustainability within the family structure. They've fallen below life. Children have fallen below life. Mothers have fallen below life. Fathers have fallen below life. So when I say fallen below life, means your inability to sustain yourself, sustain your family, and to be seen as human.
Amen. You got to be seen. So you're with these other incredible folks, 25 hand-selected.
Yes.
I'm sure it's an incredible honor in the same room with President Biden. And obviously, no matter what political side you're on, to be in a room with the President of the United States of America.
Right.
Has got to be like a mind-boggling experience for you. Because when you were 19, you were homeless, basically, in the bushes, in the park in L.A. And fast forward,
yes.
those years later, what was that feeling like?
It was as if I have not completely fulfilled my promise, because my promise to be fulfilled once I leave this earth. That's when my job is done. I'm not in a hurry to get there.
Please.
But just to know that where I was, I could never see where I am. But where I am, I remember where I was. So, I mean, that's interesting to say that. Where I was, I could never see where I am. But where I am, I always see where I was.
You never forgot your roots.
Never forgot.
That's a blessing, too. Unfortunately, some people forget where they came from, and they think they're holier than now. They think they're better than everybody else, but they forgot where they started.
There's no for and no more here.
So, I mean, that's incredible. What'd you learn from that conference with all these incredibly talented people who really have a huge heart in giving back and making the world better? They're feeding the hungry. They're helping people that are below life to get their lives back on the right track. What's it like?
I learned tools that I can utilize, sources that I can go to, access to things that I didn't think that I thought I didn't have access, people I thought I didn't have access to, and just different ways of operating, using different tools in my toolbox, because we have a toolbox that we utilize to be able to help someone else. One person may need a screwdriver in their life to help them tighten things up. Somebody else may need a wrench to help loosen up some of the strongholds that have held them down. Some people need a hammer to try to beat some stuff, you know, out of their lives. So learning to have develop extra tools, it has made me more effective to provide the needs of other people. Because when you just look at one door, you don't realize that there's other doors that you have access to, but you never turned around to look to see that those doors were there.
Right. You use the analogy of a toolbox. You basically send a different program someone might need to get it back on the right track.
Right.
Because people do sometimes fall off the track. You got to get back on and use your vast resources and everything that you've done over the many years. You know, one of the things also where I love doing the show is to meet people like you, is the wonderful people out there. You have a lot of wonderful businesses, local folks donating money, donating their time, giving supplies. Did it surprise you, the goodness out there, Pastor?
It does. It takes a lot of funding to run a program like what we do. Is there ever enough? No. Could there be more? Yes. But we do what we can do. We get food donations, we get clothing donations, we get furniture, we get small appliances, we get baby items, and that's all wonderful. But it takes funding to run a program like what we do.
Right, and the Beacon of Hope, you're doing it all. You're doing beyond God's work. I know your family inspires you.
Yes.
Your husband, you've got Johnny, Tanisha, your grandmother, proud grandmother.
Yes.
I know that God is so important in your life.
Yes.
And your team at the Beacon of Hope. I know that inspires you.
Yes.
And that's important to find inspiration in life. And I think that really is important.
Yes.
You know, you have a lot of other wonderful sayings, and I love sayings because there's usually, they're sounded in like experience.
They are.
You have one of these sayings, life isn't always fair, because it's not.
Right.
I mean, things happen to people. It's not always fair, but you always, from what I'm reading, you pick yourself up and you do it. You know, put your all into it and keep your word. I read, your word is your bond. And
yes.
The second I heard it, you know, my late dad always used to say that. He said, if you make a promise, you got to keep it.
Yes.
Why was that so important? Why is that important to you to this very moment, to keep your word?
Because what I've experienced in life for me is that people didn't always keep their word. People would say they would do things and then they didn't. And I know what that hurt, being on the side of wanting to receive something or being promised, you know, to receive something and you never get it. It can be devastating. So when I tell someone I'm going to do it, I do it. I push until I get it done, because I know what disappointment and discouragement. We all experience disappointment and discouragement, but you can sign a contract, but a paper means nothing if there's no follow through. And my follow through is always my word. And if I feel like there's a possibility I can't do it, I won't say yes. I'll say I'll do what I can do.
You know, darling, we've covered so much, and we covered a lot in almost an hour, and it's beyond a blessing you came out. I mentioned that you obviously were selected USA Today Woman of the Year for New Jersey.
Yes.
And, you know, candidly, should be for the whole country. What you're doing right there in Mount Holly, New Jersey, is miraculous. You are growing because of you and because of your husband and your team and the family, and you're giving hope. And you know why it's growing, too?
Why?
Because it works.
Yes.
It's working. And I know you got big goals and dreams, and I know that you're going to make it come true. And one of the things, Darlene, and well, I just want to say once again, it meant so much you took the time. I never met you before. I heard about you, and you have surpassed real.
Aww.
What kind of lady you were. You're better than I thought. And I thought you were spectacular. So God bless you.
Thank you.
For the listeners out there, get involved. Lift others up. You're going to lift yourself up in the process. People like Pastor Darlene Trappier are making it happen, but you can make it happen too. Get involved. Donate your time. Donate your clothes. Donate your gifts in life. Whatever talents you have, don't be afraid. Stand up and start getting involved. We're in this together. Never forget this. We got to come together as a country. We got to help others in need. Never forget. We are in this together. God bless you, and please tune in next Sunday. Take care of each other.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.